Go ahead and keep your Bibles open there to 2 Timothy chapter 2. And as we look to the last verse that was just read, verse 22, we have another command to flee. Over the past few weeks, we've been looking at these commands as we have the devil flee from us. What is it that you and I need to be fleeing from? And so we've explored a number of areas, and we come to this passage in verse 22, and Paul says to Timothy, flee youthful lust, or as other translations say, flee youthful passions. When you think about this verse, there may be two questions that immediately come to mind. First of all, what is youthful? That's a debated question. I remember one time I was preaching from Titus chapter 2 about the duties of older women. And I said, there are a lot of things older women need to be doing. And I said, ladies, there's a lot of older women amongst us. And I realized that was probably the wrong thing to say at that point and retracted that statement, said, decide for yourself. It's interesting when you look in the Bible, there is no middle age. You're either young or you're old. Those are the two choices that you have. And so I leave it to you this morning to decide where you fit into that category. Now, the second question is, what about these passions that are under consideration? Maybe college football season is a time to talk about passion because we see it a lot, don't we? You see on a screen, they're panning the audience there at the game. All the fans are there, and you're going to see people who have painted themselves team colors. You're going to see people who are wearing these giant fake afros that are painted different colors, and you're going to see all of these different, well, is that good? Well, we say we like passionate fans, don't we? And schools oftentimes will try to say, we have the most passionate fans of anyone. But does passion ever go too far? Whatever the case, whether it be sports, whether it be our enthusiasms, whatever, do passions ever go too far? Well, we think about the legal system, and there is a term that's called a crime of passion, isn't there? And so it's something that started out maybe very good, maybe even very wholesome, but yet goes in a direction that it doesn't need to go. And I think that's what the apostle's talking about here. Sometimes this passage has been explained as almost the same thing as what we looked at a couple of weeks ago with flee fornication. But it's not. To put it only in terms of fleeing that of sexual lust or sexual passions that are inappropriate, I think would limit this verse much more than what the apostle had in mind. Because as we noted from our reading this morning, this verse is a part of a much bigger context. The Apostle Paul is telling Timothy, here are things you need to both preach and both need to be as well. Things that you need to have within your life. And so we look at verse 22, and as the Apostle says, flee youthful passions, I think we get an idea of what he's talking about by looking at the second half of the verse. After saying to flee these youthful passions, he says, pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace. These are the positives. These are the things that we need to see in our lives. And so this morning, let's take a look based on the last part of this verse, what it is we're supposed to be avoiding. And as we think about this, I believe it does have very, very practical relevance to those who are younger. But I'm going to say this as well. The things we're going to talk about are oftentimes temptations we don't outgrow. We may get better at dealing with them, but I think any of these things we would say, no matter what age we are, we can understand that the devil is pressing us to commit these actions, to fall to these passions. And thus, no matter whether we're 14 or 94, I believe there's things we can learn from what the apostle would tell us here. So with that in mind, youthful passion number one that I believe the apostle is telling us to avoid is just simply a very generic idea of unrighteousness. If you note there at the end of the verse, he says, pursue righteousness. Therefore, I think it's very easy to understand that he's saying to flee from unrighteousness. Now, in our youth, we are not predetermined to be unrighteous. But I would say from the things that God has given us within His Word, that He tells us that youth is a time when we are very susceptible to unrighteous things. In fact, even as the Lord talks to parents, it's interesting what He says through Solomon over in Proverbs 22, When in verse 15 he says, folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline drives it far from him. One of the things we understand about discipline is it is an attempt to show the inappropriateness of unrighteous acts. I had a student a couple of weeks ago who was trying to trap me on this subject. And he said, is violence never the answer? And I said, violence is never the answer. And he said, so why do parents spank their kids then? Isn't that violent? And I said, no. And I took the opportunity here to say, when we talk about discipline, that is not a violent act. It is an act to associate pain with unrighteousness. Why? Because we want our children to grow up and to understand that when you do things that are contrary to that of authority, it's going to bring difficulty to you. Whether that be in a secular sense, or much more importantly, in a biblical sense, a godly sense. And so it's no surprise in the same book, Solomon, as he opens the book of Proverbs, as though he's speaking to his son, we'll take the first part of the chapter and he'll say, son, let me tell you about the problems when you commit the sins of passion. When you fall in with the company of the unrighteous, this is what happens. This is what it will cause to bring in your life. So even in a very basic sense, the corporal punishment aspect of the Bible teaches that discipline is to show the pain of unrighteousness so that when we leave our youthful time of life, we are very well convinced that unrighteousness is not the course that we want to take. But what would Paul tell us? He would say to us, understand that acts of unrighteousness spring from passions. They're passions out of control. We could go through so many of these, but you think about what we've talked about already. As we think about fornication and adultery, isn't that acts of passion that have gone too far? We think about other things often associated with youth. Oftentimes we'll have problems in a school with bullying. Some child who's wanting to pick on all of these other children. You know, the old line was that that's just because he's not a tough guy. I think we're wrong on that. I think he very much is a tough guy. And the reason that a bully operates is because he's driven by that passion to be the top dog. He's driven by that passion to have everyone else under his control. Again, that's one of those things sometimes it's not outgrown. Outbursts that youth have against parents or authority figures oftentimes will spring from the passion of that desire for independence, that nobody's going to tell me what to do. And therefore, we see that unrighteousness occurring. From all of these and from so many, the Apostle Paul says to us, flee from these things. Get away from them. Because for a Christian, there is no place for unrighteousness. So then, if we are fleeing from unrighteousness, what are we pursuing? Well, isn't that what the apostle tells us? He says you are to pursue those things that are righteous. And it's interesting, in the preceding verses in 2 Timothy chapter 2, I believe the apostle is telling Timothy both in a positive and a negative way, this is how you pursue righteousness. In fact, he starts out in verse 15 and he says, Timothy, you need to show yourself approved to God. You need to be the kind of workman in which God looks and he says, here is someone in whom I am pleased. Here is someone who is seeking to do what I would have him to do. He continues on, and he says, verse 16, if you're going to be righteous, Timothy, get away from irreverent babble. Get away from those things that are leading you in the direction of the unrighteous. And he goes on to say in verse 19, you trust that the Lord is your firm foundation. You rest everything on Him. If you are going to pursue righteousness, if you're going to flee from the unrighteous passions, God has got to be your foundation. And he continues that thought in verse 21 and he says, so cleanse yourself from those things that are dishonorable. Get away from those kinds of things. And then verse 22, flee youthful passions. When we pursue righteousness in our youth, we're not only pleasing God, But we are building a foundation on which everything we want of a spiritual nature can grow. In our youth, we are laying the foundation on which we can become the kind of solid Christian with a faith that will get us to eternity and to a home with God. And that sets the basis for overcoming youthful passion. What else would Paul tell us to avoid? I think we've got a generic idea here. In everything you pursue righteousness, but let's get a little bit more specific. I think the Apostle Paul is also saying that one of the problems that we oftentimes face in our youth is the passion of impatience. And I would say youth is a very impatient time of life. No matter if you're there or if you pass that point in your life, you know there's some impatience because youth is always a hurry-up situation, isn't it? We're ready to go to school, and then we're ready to get in those double digits, ready to jump from 9 to 10, and then we're ready to be teenagers, and then we're ready to get our driver's permit, and then we're ready to get our driver's license, and then we're ready to graduate from college or from high school. And it's just this constant time where we're always looking for something else. It's no surprise to us then that we may become quite impatient in our youth. And that impatient childhood can lead us to areas where we are not showing the kind of patience that we need to grow into the kind of godly individual that God desires for us to be. Again, we think about in our youth, parents who are saying, it's just not a good idea. Perhaps we have parents who are saying, no, it's not the time right now. You need to wait on something. And we know how frustrating that is. You know, one of the worst words you can hear from your parents is the word wait. Because you're not going to get what you want when you want it. We think about that again with sexual passions. Not waiting until marriage. There's the idea that there is something pleasurable out there and somebody's trying to hold me back and I'm not going to be held back. And we know all of the dilemmas and all of the situations that that can get us into. We think about getting too deep in debt. Young people who get married and they want to have the lifestyle of their parents who have been working for that lifestyle for 40, 50 years. They want it now. And so the debt rolls in. And all of these things, I believe, can be tied together with the common link of being impatient. And so Paul would tell us to flee this youthful passion. He would say to flee those things that would cause us to get ourselves in such bad situations because we are not waiting. But I believe we can take that a step further in danger. I'm afraid sometimes all of this impatience that we have may cause us to become very impatient Christians who are not ready to wait on the Lord, who are not ready to say that the Lord is working on His schedule and I'm satisfied with that. And the Lord understands that because He warns us. A couple of Psalms, I think, make the point very clear to us. Psalm 27 and verse 14, where the psalmist says, "Wait for the Lord. Be strong. Let your heart take courage. Wait for the Lord," he repeats. And then perhaps a little bit stronger, in chapter 46 and verse 10, he says, "Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth." The idea there is stop what you are doing and look at me. That's what the Lord's saying. And he's saying when you get in this impatient, this hurry up, this rush me attitude, stop. Because I'm God, and I will be exalted. You wait on my schedule. The thing is, whether we're young or old, oftentimes we want things done when we want them done. And when God says wait, we have difficulty with that. So how do we handle that? How do we deal with that youthful passion? Well, as we look in verse 22 at the things to pursue, the apostle tells us, when you find that you are getting impatient, have faith that God knows what He's doing. And this is hard. Because what God is saying is, I want you to understand that I am going to do the very best at the very best possible time for you. And oftentimes in our very short-sighted, our very finite way of looking at things, what we do is we say, Lord, you're just wrong on that. Now is the time. Now is when I need this done. And the Lord says, no. He says, have faith in me. Trust me that I know best. The apostle spoke of this many times, but two occasions. He said in 2 Corinthians 5, so we are always of good courage. We know that while we are at home in the body, we are away from the Lord, for we walk by faith, not by sight. Later, we go on and we read in the book of Philippians chapter 3 and verse 9, and to be found in Him, not having a righteousness of my own that comes from the law, but that which comes through faith in Christ, the righteousness from God that what? That depends on faith. Again, in our youth, we need to be building this kind of relationship with God. And we may pray for a spouse, and we may pray for children, and we may pray for a good college experience, and we may pray for all kinds of things that just don't come when we think that they ought to. And to that God says, wait and trust. I know what's very best, and I'll answer you in the very best time. And when we can build that kind of faith in our youth, our old age will rest on a very solid foundation. Paul says, flee from unrighteousness and pursue righteousness. He says, flee from impatience and pursue faith. I believe as well in this passage, the apostle is also saying to flee from selfishness. If ever there was anything associated with childhood, it is selfishness, right? We oftentimes think maybe a child's first word is mom or dad. Usually it's mine. Even a child at very young age will look at another child and make it very clear, you are violating my territory. You are not to play with that. And so we have that, and I think perhaps it's somewhat exacerbated in our times. Because upon request, oftentimes parents will shower children with all of these luxuries at a very young age, just simply by the child's request. When you see 4 and 5 year olds with cell phones, you know the economy couldn't be too bad, right? Children who have anything, well, what happens? If we're not very careful, selfish children grow into selfish youths. We grow up and we don't have parents who are telling us to share, and parents who are telling us that you got to get along and you've got to share these things. And before too long, we begin thinking that everything revolves around me. And that all about me mentality contradicts very strongly with Christianity's all about others. So you've got two competing ideas here. A youthful experience that says, it's all for me, and a God who's saying, no, it's not all for you. It's you sharing. It's you giving of yourself to others. And that's what God expects of us. Selfishness is a danger. In fact, James tells us in chapter 3, verses 14 through 16, he says, but if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition, that idea we're talking about in your hearts, do not boast and be false to the truth. This is not the wisdom that comes from down from above, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder and every vile practice. Can you get much more bare bones than that? Look at what he says about selfishness. It's earthly. It's unspiritual. It's demonic. Therefore, Paul says, flee from these things. Attitudes that we have that show no desire to help others, no desire to give to the Lord's work, is an attitude that will destroy us no matter what age we are. So how do we fight that? Well, again, the apostle tells us what to pursue. He says, as you're dealing with this, you put this behind you and you pursue love. That's how you overcome selfishness. That's how you overcome these ambitions that would cause you not to look out for the interest of others, but only for the interest of yourself. We won't take time to read it today, but I'll just remind you of the lead-in to the Good Samaritan parable. The man's trying to justify himself, and he's failing. And so finally he blurts out to the Lord, "Well, who is my neighbor? You know, I'm supposed to show love to my neighbor. Who is my neighbor then?" And the Lord very well answers that question. And what's the whole point of that parable? Here is a man who is in need, and here are these people who are supposed to be good people passing by on the other side. Who showed love? Who showed unselfishness? It was the one who got off of his own schedule. The one who said, "I'm going to do for others as I would want done for me." And the Lord says, "This is the one. This is the one who is pursuing love." And so as you and I think about this, the way we know whether we are fleeing the youthful lust of impatience and or selfishness rather, and pursuing the godliness of love, is how we treat others. And that is not some grand idea, though it is. But it's answered in everyday, simple, fundamental actions. We can look at our lives at this minute, and we can answer the question, am I pursuing love and fleeing from selfishness? That's what the Lord would have of us. And our youth should be a time when we are seeking to help others. We buck the trend. We're not a young person who says, it's all about me. It's doing things for others. And when we reach an age to understand that, we are at an age to get busy. We are at an age to pursue this. And so Paul says, pursue righteousness. And pursue faith. And pursue love. And in these things, you'll flee from these things that are so passionate in our youth that drive us from God. Let me mention one more this morning. One other youthful passion that we oftentimes find in our youth is the idea of being argumentative. The idea that we believe that at our young years, we hold all the answers for life. I know this Mark Twain quote has been around a long time. But nonetheless, I think it's a fitting place to remind ourselves of it. Mark Twain said, "When I was a boy of 14, my father was so ignorant, I could hardly stand to have the old man around. But when I got to be 21, I was astonished at how much he had learned in 7 years." Those of us who are on the other side, we understand that. We understand it, don't we? We understand the argumentative nature we perhaps had with our parents of thinking we were right, and maybe taking them on, or at least taking them on in our minds, that we had the right answers and they didn't. That's something that we have to flee. That's something we have to get over, thinking that we know it all and arguing with those who are in authority. Let me suggest to you, this can get much more difficult when we think that we've got all the answers in religious matters. The young person who believes the older generation has missed the boat with religion is oftentimes going to find himself in deep water. The young person who says, the older generation has just missed it. I've got all the answers. I understand what God says. They're wrong. We better be careful. Because the Lord has put very great stock in old age. In fact, Proverbs 16:31, he says, "Gray hair is the crown of glory. It is gained in a righteous life." When there is an older Christian who I think is wrong, I need to be very careful before I challenge that older Christian. Someone who has lived 50, 60 years of his life looking for the truth, I need to be careful before I condemn that person. Well, let's take it a step further. We often find ourselves in even more danger when we think God has missed the boat. And if ever there was a time when this temptation is abundant, it is now. That God just simply doesn't know what He's talking about. Whether He be talking about fornication or whether He be talking about homosexuality, no matter what He's talking about, God is an antiquated, outdated notion. And what we are finding is secular parents have now raised a secular generation with this attitude. And the idea that there is a line of authority in marriage is something that is as old as a buggy whip. When we are in our youth, we must be very careful about the criticisms that we place on God. There's an account in the Old Testament with the prophet Elisha, where Elisha is walking down the road and a group of youths come out. And they say, "Rise up, go up, you bald head." And a curse is called down on those youths, and they are destroyed by two bears. And that bothers a lot of people. I've taught that a lot, and it's just troubling. But yet I think if we understand two things, first of all, those youths are not 5 and 6 year olds. These are people who could be anywhere from 16 to 40, who have come in, and because of their disrespect for the ways of God, they are showing a very visible disrespect for His prophet. That's why God takes the action that He does. And I believe the reason that account is recorded is for this very reason. If you think you can argue against God, if you think you can find God wrong, you are sadly mistaken. And so when we find ourselves with this temptation in youth, what do? Well, we pursue the things that make for peace. What is ultimate peace? It's the right relationship with God, isn't it? And so when Paul says, pursue righteousness and pursue faith and pursue love and pursue peace, he's talking about that with both man and God. We are pursuing things that will make us people who can get along. I want something to be understood before I move on. What I'm talking about is not accepting falsehood, because there are old people who are wrong. And when an old person is wrong, he or she needs to be challenged just like a young person who's wrong. I'm not saying we accept everything just because it's always been accepted. But yet what we do first of all is prepare ourselves to make sure we have the appropriate respect for age. More importantly, the appropriate respect for God. And then we determine what the truth is. I think in this passage that we're looking at, two verses very much stand out in this point. 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 16, where Paul says, avoid irreverent babble. It will lead people into more and more ungodliness. If in your youth you find that you just like to argue, get over that. That'll destroy you. If you're someone who somebody can tell you black and you say white, someone says day and you say night, just for the sake of argument, you are not pursuing peace. And so Paul, in telling Timothy about what he's going to be doing in preaching the gospel, he says, avoid those things. They'll get you into trouble every time. You ever got in a religious conversation with somebody who just wants to argue? It is the most frustrating experience you can have, because there is no seeking the truth. There is only seeking to win. Paul says, get rid of that. Stay away from that. He goes on to tell Timothy, have nothing to do with foolish, ignorant controversies. People who like to invent a controversy in the Bible to argue about are people who have no interest in finding the truth of the Bible. Paul says, stay away from them. And I think that very solid, sound biblical wisdom to Timothy is certainly solid and sound and biblical for us, no matter what age we're in. And so we flee from that youthful passion of wanting to argue about everything, reject everything for the sake of rejection, and we pursue that which brings peace. In these short verses, Paul covers a lot when he says, flee youthful passions, and he says, get away from those things that will destroy. But I want to say this in closing. When we're young, it's a wonderful time of life, whether you're there now or whether you remember it. It's a wonderful time. But the fact is, it must be a time of fleeing youthful lusts. It must be a time of fleeing youthful passions, because that is the only way that we will have the devil fleeing from us. As in everything we've said with these lessons, the reason he flees is because he sees who we are standing with. And when we are standing with God in our youth, he will flee from us just as much as he will when he sees us standing with God in our older years. Flee youthful passions. The Lord will stand with us and the devil will run. This morning, maybe there's someone here who has been fleeing these youthful passions. And you're ready now to make the commitment to God. You realize that the changes that need to be made in your life, but you realize that the biggest change is becoming a Christian. That's how you get the devil to flee from you. Not that he's going to give up on you, but you are taking a very solid stand of saying, I stand with God. You ready to do that this morning? Maybe you know, you've known what to do for a long time. Maybe you know how that baptism will wash away your sins because of the grace of God. Now's the time to do that this morning. Or if you've pursued some of these things that we've talked about this morning, and you see that that's been a problem in your life, make that right with God. Whether that's individually or whether it's something we can pray with you, whatever it takes. Let's flee from the devil so that he'll flee from us. If you need to respond to the Lord's invitation this morning, won't you come while we...